Welcome to Success Made to Last. I'm Tim Moore. This is the podcast that helps you live the best version of you, where we interview people who live lives of excellence. Brought to you by Gracefully Yours. Today, we are talking with Jack Canfield. Jack is one of the world's great gurus of the human potential movement. He is most famous as the founder and co-author of the Billion Dollar Chicken Soup publishing franchise, with over 250 books published and an aggregate 500 million plus units sold. It has been translated as well into over 40 languages. Jack, interestingly enough, holds a Guinness Book World Record for being the only person in history to have 7 books on the New York Times bestseller list at the same time. Jack has published many other bestsellers, but most recently, his most recent bestsellers have included The Success Principles, How to Get From Where You Are to Where You Want to Be, and very recently, within the last 60 days, the Success Principles Workbook, an action plan for getting from where you are to where you want to be. Jack founded the Jack Canfield Training Company and travels all over the world, online and on ground, to speak and train. We're also joined today by my old friend Stuart Emery, whom you will have heard in previous podcasts here. Stuart will lead the discussion. And Stuart, to refresh y'all's memory, is the former co-founder and CEO of EST, the first New Age self-improvement company, is known as the father of the human potential movement and is the developer of the most successful ad campaign in TV history, the MasterCard Priceless Ads. Take it away, Stuart.
Well, good morning, Jack. You know, I heard your resume, very impressive, but we both know that. And yet, you know, if you asked me what you appreciate most about Jack and what you think he should most be recognized for, it wouldn't be for the chicken soup franchise, as spectacular as that is. For me, when I think of you, I think of the core thing that's always driven you, which is, you started being concerned about people's self-esteem. And you really were clear that if they didn't develop that, then they wouldn't live the best version of themselves and they wouldn't be successful. And you started doing that work in schools with young people. And one way or another, you've been doing that ever since. And that's a part of you I'd love to talk about. You know, I love this idea of success principles because, as you know, we're rather fond of titles with success in them. This podcast station is Success Made to Last. Before that, we did a book called Success Built to Last. And what I love about your new book is it operationalizes, that's a $100 word which my former publisher wouldn't let me use, but which operationalizes the principles and the ideas. So that's a broad invitation, Jack, to go down any path you'd like to go, and just for us to be together, because we've known each other a long time, so and I've loved you for a long time.
Well, let me just start by saying how I got into all that. I was went to Harvard as an undergraduate. I often say I graduated from the half of the class that made the top half possible, so I wasn't the smartest guy there, but I wasn't stupid because I did get in. And my senior year, I was studying to be, I thought I was going to go to law school, and I was studying Chinese history, thinking maybe I'd become a diplomat or something, and I took Chinese language. I discovered I wasn't that good at it, and it was really challenging, and then I needed an easy course, so I said to my counselor, I need an easy A. What's an easy A? He said, go take SOCREL 10. That was Social Relations 10. Turned out it was an encounter group. It was just people sitting around talking about their feelings and their goals and their dreams, their fears, and I fell in love with it. And I couldn't get into graduate school in psychology with one class in psychology as an undergraduate. So someone said, well, why don't you sneak into psychology through education? So I went to the University of Chicago. Part of that was teaching for a year as part of a two-year program. And I ended up in an inner-city high school. It was all black except for about 12 students. It had been one of those white flight communities where people moved out when the blacks moved in. And a few people that were on the swimming team decided not to leave because they wanted to, they were the captain of the team and they wanted to stick around for one more year. One was the son of a minister who was just taking a stand for integration. And I quickly learned my students weren't motivated. And then when I looked deeper, it's like they didn't believe in themselves. They had no images and role models of people who'd been successful. Many of my students had never been more than three blocks from the school. They'd never been downtown, never been on a bus, never been on the L. So I became very interested in how can I raise their self-esteem and teach them to be motivated. And that's when I ran into W. Clement Stone, who was my mentor for many, many years. And then, as you may remember, he was a really good friend of Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich, the great success classic that most people have read. And they actually co-authored a book together called The Success System That Never Fails. And I learned all that stuff from him and started teaching it in my classes. And as a result, I got Teacher of the Year Award. The students were really succeeding. The school said, we want you to teach the other teachers what you're doing. You know, the heck with history. Start teaching this stuff. So I started teaching that. And then eventually one day, this one principal of a school in the Chicago district said, my husband's company needs what you're teaching. And I said, I never worked in a company except as a floor sweeper in a General Electric plant one summer between college and graduate school. And she said, they're just big kids in suits. Like, you go over and you work with them.
That's great.
And it turned out they were.
Yeah, how if you try to explain to somebody what self-esteem actually is, what do you tell them?
I tell them it's a combination of three things. It's the experience of feeling lovable, capable, and significant. So the lovable part is like you feel included. You accept all parts of yourself. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to have the body you have. It's kind of unconditional self-acceptance, which is hard for most people. It takes a lifetime for most people to get there. Not all people do. The capable side is what's turned into the success principles, because I really looked at how do people become competent and capable. And capable means that you are able to do whatever you need to do to fulfill your wishes and desires and needs. And then significant means that what you do matters to someone else, that you make a difference in the world, whether it's to your family, to your kids, to your community, or in your case, in my case, to thousands and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of people through our books and through our seminars and now podcasts and things like that.
Jack, I once asked a very well-known psychotherapist, why do people become therapists? He said, well, basically to figure out why they're crazy. I said, okay, I get that. But if we talk about self-esteem, was that ever something you felt you needed to address for yourself?
Totally, totally. When I was in graduate school, that's when I first began to look at self-esteem. I was in a program called Psychological Education. How do you educate people about psychological issues? That was after I was teaching. I went back for a doctorate.
Yeah.
And we always said, if you have a problem, make a curriculum about it. And then if you teach that curriculum, you'll probably learn to solve your own problem.
Right.
So I always say, if it's done on time, it's called education. If it's done late, it's called therapy.
Yes.
I had terrible self-esteem as a kid. I was totally shy. I was afraid to ask girls out. I went to an all-boys school, so that made it even worse. I didn't have that natural day-to-day interaction with them. I only learned about 2 years out of college that the girl I had the biggest crush on had a crush on me, but I never had the courage to ask her out. And, you know, one of those things where you go,
that kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Totally. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so anyhow, there you were putting this together in your own mind.
Yeah, for me, I was someone who didn't ever feel I was enough. You know, I mean, I'm 75, and just in the last couple of years, I got involved in some plant medicine work. And I really realized on one of the journeys I took that one of the reasons I've written over 200 books is almost like I remember being on this journey and saying, was 200 books enough? Am I enough now? You know, so it's like the reality is I think I'm probably 90% more self-esteem than I was when I was in my 20s, but I still started to see little pieces of it. You know, like how much do I need to know to be enough?
Now, do you remember, or is there a point in your life that you can think back to when you feel you move from the self-esteem glass being half empty to half full?
I do. I think it was when I wrote my first book. It was called 100 Ways to Enhance Self-Concept in the Classroom.
Tim knows. That was a big book.
Yeah, it was. It sold 400,000 copies, which for an educator is ridiculous. And it was with Prentice Hall, and they had this great direct mail guy who went out and helped me sell lots of books. But I started getting invited all over the country to run workshops for teachers. And every time I would do it, they would come up and say, that's the best workshop we've ever had. This is what we really need. This is what's missing in education. And I began to feel like I was enough, that I was doing enough, and that that I mattered.
And that was when you really moved to do seminars on a bigger scale? Was that when you made that next leap?
No, I have to give you credit for that. I was doing workshops for, 15, 16 people, being a Gestalt therapist, running weekend workshops. And then I took a course called Actualizations, which you had created. Frank was the trainer, came out to Boston, and I took this training with 350 people. And I had an epiphany. It's like, wow, you can do this with 300 people at a time. And the energy in the room is so much better because you've got all these people kind of popping at once, and then the whole energy of the group tends to move people along. And if one person's stuck, it doesn't matter. Someone else pops through and they get unstuck by watching them. And so that's when I decided I wanted to do that.
And so you went off and did that. Took a little route of interesting high points to do that.
Well, I came out, if you remember, I came out to California and I met with you.
I do remember. I always remember that.
Yeah. I mean, now you're one of my best friends. Back then you were like this iconic god who was doing this amazing work. You had a picture behind you of a lion. There was nothing on your desk. There was nothing on your credenza except a telephone and these Love Allure blinds, I remember, on the left side, your right side. And I thought, holy mackerel. This is like, and if you remember, I said to you, for a while, I couldn't even speak. And I said to you, I looked away and I said, I don't think, for some reason, I'm not able to speak to you right now. The words are not coming. And you said, well, that's because I'm holding this really huge space. If you remember, you were working with Muktananda at the time,
yes,
doing deep meditation, spiritual growth. And then you said something, and it may sound arrogant, but it wasn't. It was just the truth. You said, well, I'm holding a very big space. And right now you're expanding into that space just by being in my presence. And when you reach that, you'll be able to speak to me. And about a minute or two later, we started the conversation, and I'll never forget that.
I'm almost embarrassed to think back that I actually said that. I did. But you hear that, and it's so easy to misinterpret it if you're not present, because it sounds like I'm the guy who needs to be committed.
Hey, Stuart and Jack, how long ago is that now? Is that the mid-80s? Is that 35 years ago?
Pretty much.
Late 70s.
70s. Late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
Okay, late 70s even. Wow, my goodness gracious.
So Jack, if you say Jack Canfield, people say, is that the chicken soup guy? And I kind of don't like it when people say that. What would you like to be remembered for having contributed?
Well, I'm okay being the chicken soup guy. We've sold 500 million books. And
I understand.
I meet all these people that are 35 who tell me they started reading the book when they were 14 in high school, How to Make an Old Man Feel Old,
But, yes.
I realized that it was only a chapter in my life, For yes. many, many years, 15 years, I did that. And it gave me a platform that I now can do the work I do from. It also gave me a lot of money when I sold the company about 10 years ago. And, but I think I'd like to be remembered for my life purpose is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in the context of love and joy. So if I could be remembered for having done that for millions of people, right now, my biggest initiative is training 1 million trainers. And just yesterday, Stuart and Tim, I had this experience of completing a 3-day seminar. We had people from 17 countries.
Virtually.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a live training, people coming in, and they couldn't, of course. So we delivered it by Zoom, and I did the first day myself. I taught all day long. And then the next 2 days, people broke into breakout groups with some of my senior trainers, and they presented the material and got feedback about how to do it better. And everybody they loved it. And what I became aware of is I can now teach this worldwide without leaving my office, just like we're doing now. Yeah. And so I can have trainers in all these countries that are doing some of the local experiential exercises with people, but I can come in by Zoom. And I came in at the end of every day and did an hour and a half of Q&A and stuff. And it was profound. So my goal is by the year 2030 to have 1 million trainers, which I know sounds huge, but the goal is They say, unless the coronavirus does something we don't think it's going to do, that we'll have 8 billion people on the planet by then. And if every trainer trains 1,000 people a year for 8 years, we'll reach 8 billion people. I don't expect to reach every kid in a village in Pakistan, but I know we'll reach a lot of people. So that's my vision. And if people remember me for that, then I'll be very fulfilled.
Well, I think actually you're well on your way to being remembered for that.
Yeah.
Because I know when people ask me about you, I talk about that part of you.
Mm.
You know, I experience you as a kind of person around whom other people like themselves best.
Oh, that's very sweet. That's well stated. I may steal that from you.
You're welcome. Well, because, but that's when people are in your presence, if they start to like themselves best, that's a delivery on the self-esteem intention, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember a quote we put in one of my chicken soup books was about this little boy who this teacher saw him the year later and said, you know, I hear you had a good year last year. And he said, yeah, I really love being in your class. Because when I was in your class, I felt like I was somebody special.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the beginning of self-esteem. And people, when they first start to taste that, because people hear the ideas, but we used to say back in the old days that the truth believed is a lie. So people can believe all this stuff about success principles. But until they start to taste it and experience it internally, yeah, it's not getting them there. We need to break away here just for a moment, Jack, and we did that, so now we're back again. We don't need long for a commercial break.
That's okay. Hey, Michael, well, you can edit that. I was on mute, Stuart, and I was about to do that. Thank you very much. Let's take a moment right now to hear from our sponsor, Gratefully Yours. All right, go ahead, Stuart. And okay. Michael, edit that out.
Right. So let's chase that a little bit further. One, I had an experience recently. You know, I play the role on an organization that Jack and I, he's president, I'm vice president of. I'm the resident curmudgeon. And you know, for a while I thought, gee, I should stop being like this. But Jack said one day, he said, Stuart, if you stop being like that, I'll have to do it. And I don't want to do that. You know, it'll be... blow my image, and curmudgeons are needed. And I thought, wow, that's a whole new like consideration of self-esteem I can embrace, right? Curmudgeons have a value. But I watched The Secret unfold, and I was there when it was filmed. And but I've always been a little bit kind of curmudgeonly about the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were traveling internationally somewhere, and we walked onto an island. We walked into a bar, and Jack walked in, and the woman who was the bartender, just like was frozen in time.
We were in Croatia.
We're in Croatia. So, you know, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. She reveals, because she becomes dysfunctional, so I take over running the bar, which I'm equipped to do, and start delivering drinks to people as Jack unfolds the story. And it turns out she somehow had caught in Jack's episodes on the internet or somewhere, and she created a vision board that one day she would meet Jack. And there it is, it happened. So I'm thinking, hey, that's pretty good. And like this, we hadn't choreographed this. So fast forward, you know, I have an airplane, and I decide if I'm going to keep flying, I need partners. I was about to sell. I thought, no, damn it. You know, I want to fly into my 80s. I want to be one of those, like, 1% of pilots. So I think I need this, and this. And I got really serious about it. I got really intentional about it. And the most seemingly impossible set of things happened within 10 days. A guy rang me. He'd walked by my hangar, seen the airplane, looked the air number up on the FAA registry, saw it would belong to Stuart Emery, Googled me, and I get a phone call saying, I Googled Stuart Emery. Are you that guy? And I said, yes. He said, you want a partner in your airplane? It turns out he's the same age as my son. His father owns a couple of airplanes, the same age as I am. So anyhow, it all unfolded, all came together. And I called Jack up. And I said, Jack, I'm really embarrassed. He said, what happened to you? So I told Jack the story. He said, so you pointed. I said, hey, there might be something to this law of attraction. After all, Because Jack and I know each other so well, we can laugh about this. But the story I'd love you to tell now, because I just like the story a bunch, is a similar guy, not similar to me, but he's in the middle of nowhere, and he doesn't have anything, and somebody sends him your book, and he ends up a billionaire. So would you tell us that story, please?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, you just came up with the title for your next book. And then it's called, Hey, Maybe There's Something to This Shit After All.
After 40 years of talking
after
about
40
it.
Years, right. Well, I was going to do the history of the human potential movement as a series of podcasts. That might be the working title.
There you go. Well, you were there when it all started, so you can do that. Yeah. Well, the story you're referring to is a guy named Andres Pira. Andres was 19 years old, living in Sweden. He was extremely tired of living in the cold climate. He had seen some posters of Thailand. He saw they were Phuket, which is an island in Thailand, and he saw all these palm trees, and he thought, gee, I would like to get out of this cold weather. And he was getting into trouble. He was basically hanging out with some gangs. He was drinking, doing drugs, and not doing well. And his grandfather died and left him $2,000. And with that $2,000, he bought a plane ticket to Thailand. And very quickly, he did get himself to Phuket, and very quickly ran out of money. He was living homeless on the beach. And he called a friend and he said, would you be willing to send me $100? Could you wire me $100? I have no money for food. He was living on 25 cents a day, eating these noodles. That was all he got. And he said, you were never that good a friend. Why would I send you $100? But I will send you a digital copy of a book, which happened to be The Secret. And in that book, it says you should close your eyes and you should visualize what you want. You should affirm that you're going to have it. And you should feel the feelings of having it. So he hadn't had a cup of coffee in a long time because he couldn't afford it. So he closed his eyes and he's sitting there under the palm tree that he was sleeping under on the beach. And he imagines a cup of coffee and he feels the warmth of it in his hand. And he pulls it up to his nose and he inhales the aroma of it. And he imagines what it's going to taste like. And then he swallows it and he feels the taste of the coffee and he feels the warmth going down his throat and his stomach. Anyway, he just, this whole experience of drinking coffee. And the next day, he's sleeping on the beach with a beach towel under him and a beach towel over him and his suitcase for his pillow. And this guy shakes him awake and he says, hi, I have that local jet ski stand over there. And I noticed you've been sleeping on the beach for the last week. And it just occurred to me, I should buy you a cup of coffee. And he handed him a cup of coffee. And he was like, whoa, wait a second. This is too weird. This could be a coincidence. I don't know. But maybe there's more to this than I think. And so, because originally he thought it was all BS. He was just going to prove it wrong by doing it. Nothing would happen. So now he said, well, what would be the upscale next thing? So he thinks, oh, I'll visualize a meal. So he visualizing having a steak with baked potato and, you know, green beans and a salad and dessert and a glass of wine, the whole thing. About 3 days later, he's walking down the beach. And this guy comes up to him and says, you look like you're familiar. Did you come from Sweden? He says, yeah. I said, you didn't go to such and such a high school, did you? He said, yeah. He said, I think we were in the same school together. So what's your name? Andres Pira. That's right. I heard of you. Hey, let me buy you dinner. So they go, it was on sexy. Let me buy you lunch. So they go have lunch. And he had his steak. He had his baked potato. He had his green beans. He had his salad and everything. Now he's like really hooked. He says, wow, I better do this for real. So now he starts visualizing having a job. And within a few days, he gets a job standing outside these condo conversion places where they bring you in and you go and you get sold a condo conversion. Not a condo conversion, but a timeshare. So he's doing a timeshare thing. And then one day, he starts visualizing, I want a real job. This is great. But what if I was actually one of the salespeople? They're making all the money. So he starts visualizing that. About a month later, he's hustling people in there. And all of a sudden, this guy comes by and there's no salespeople because the salespeople are all out with the customers. And this guy has 1 hour to look at some property. And then he's got to run to the airport. And he says, well, tell you what. There's no regular salespeople here, but I do know a place that's available. I have a motor scooter. Hop on back. I'll take you there if you don't mind. The guy says, let's go. So they go there. They come back about a half hour later. He introduces them to the sales manager who's now back. He makes the sale. The guy says, we're going to promote you to salesperson. So now he starts visualizing being the sales manager. And within a year, he was the sales manager. Then he realized the people making the real money were the real estate people who were building these buildings. So he starts being a builder. And eventually he becomes a major builder. Now he builds resorts. He builds hotels for Hyatt and Renaissance and Marriott and so forth. And it, from 19 until 35, he's 35 right now, he's now worth $3 billion. And he was homeless to billionaire in 15 years. But the point was, he said, every time I did it, I just visualized the next thing. I visualized it every morning for about 10 or 15 minutes, felt the feelings, did everything you're supposed to do. He said, at one point I got so successful, I stopped visualizing, everything went to hell. He said, my business fell apart. He said, and I realized why it was. Then he started visualizing again, and it all took off. And so he wrote a book with Joe Vitale, who you know, called Homeless to Billionaire, and I wrote the foreword for it, which is why I know the story. And last year, he invited me and Joe and Mike Tyson, the boxer, and Miss Universe to come over and do a workshop with him. And I got to hang out with Mike Tyson, and he gave us all these big opals. I have an opal that's that big, sir. Tim, it's
wow.
Huge. And he's an investor in an opal mine. Because he's a billionaire, he can do that.
So I noticed that I listened to that story that there was a point in there where the guy started taking action based upon moving him in the direction of what he was visualizing.
Right. Action is required, yes.
Yes, the action was a required step. And so that can get subtly lost in that story. But I noticed when that started to creep into it. So I think that's an important link to make in people's mind because I remember going to Marshall Thurber. I don't know if you ever heard of Marshall Thurber.
Marshall's a good friend of mine, yeah.
Okay, so I haven't seen Marshall for a while, but he had this Brooklyn business school back east.
Right.
So I go there to do a keynote.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm talking, people are filling in their prosperity consciousness coloring books. You can imagine how I responded to that, right, Jack?
I'm sure.
It was Cuisinart time for the people in the room.
Right.
You could have heard a pin drop. They were looking at me like I was Attila the Hun. And the wicked, well, I'm not a witch, but the wicked magician of the West. And but they just couldn't get their head around the action step. And, I'm a guy who thinks that self-esteem is very much a function of taking constructive action on your own behalf and for the good of others.
Yeah, I think it's true. It's true. I think, you can make a distinction between self-esteem, self-concept, self-image, and self-confidence. And self-esteem is how you feel about yourself.
Yes,
self-confidence is the belief that you're capable.
Yeah.
Self-image is the picture you have, and self-concept are the thoughts you think about yourself, all of which go in together, create self-esteem. But you and I know that the highest level of esteem that anyone can gather up to comes from being of service to others. Being of service by being your essential self, not having to go out and do things you don't want to do, but being of service with the gifts that you have, the inborn talents and skills. Well, skills are developed, but talents are given, and we can develop those. Too many people think, and I think this was a flaw in the movie, it didn't stress it enough. It does say it, but not strong enough. A lot of people thought, if I just sit around and visualize, everything will come into my life. And for years I was telling people, maybe if you want to have a Cadillac to show up in your garage and you don't do anything about it, the only way that's going to happen is if you live at the bottom of a hill and some Cadillac's brakes go out and drive
right.
The garage. But basically, the word satisfaction is comes from Latin. It means satis, means enough. Facere, F-A-C-E-R-E, means to make. So manufacture means to make with your hand manual. A satisfaction means enough action produces satisfaction, enough doing. And so what happens is, even in the word attraction, the last six letters are A-C-T-I-O-N. There's built-in clues. So the distinction I think that's useful to make is that most people know what are called obvious actions. You want to be a doctor, you got to study biochemistry and physiology, anatomy and all that, and you got to go to medical school, you got to do your internship and take your boards and all that. But when you start visualizing and affirming, doing the stuff that you've always thought was kind of a little woo-woo, what happens is that you begin to get inspirations. You're in the shower, you're driving to work, you're walking along, the bay where you live, whatever. And what happens is you get this insight, this idea, something you could do. And those inspirations tend to come after about 30 days of uninterrupted focusing on your goal and your intention through visualization, affirmation, or just obsession. A lot of people like Walt Disney, Steven Spielberg, Steve Jobs, they were just obsessed. They could not think about it. And so then your subconscious mind starts to have these ideas. I should call this person. I should do that. What if I did this? then you have to act on those. And every time I've acted on my intuition and my inspirations, things have taken off. Transformational Leadership Council was an inspiration. Chicken Soup for the Soul was an inspiration. The Success Principles was an inspiration. So that's the thing I think that's missing a lot, is inspired action is what really creates breakthroughs.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I realize that I've lived that way without actually recognizing that I've lived that way.
Right.
What always inspired me is being in the presence of people who are world-class and doing what they do.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter what the field is, as long as they're really, really, really good at it.
Yeah. You know, I used to be around Mark Victor Hansen, who I call him a celebrity whore. He just loves to be with famous people. And I think for him, it makes him feel like he's important. But what I liked about it was most famous people have done something magnificent or they wouldn't be famous.
Correct.
And so
that's what I like about it.
People that are smart, they're willing to take risks, they're inspired, they've conquered a lot of challenges, they have great stories to tell, and they have a certain charisma that is infectious.
Yeah, and I see that. I went to a dinner party that Johnny took me to in Italy quite a long time ago at Sergio Leone's house. Now, if young people are listening, they may not know who Sergio Leone was. But he found Clint Eastwood and gave us the good, the bad, and the ugly, a fistful of dollars, a few dollars more, a whole series, and created that whole category of Western. And I was there with Rudolf Nureyev, who was at that time the best male ballet dancer in the world. And at the head table, there was Nureyev, there was Sergio, of course. There was the pawn queen of Europe, a guy who was like the Johnny Carson of Italy, and another man who was one of the top songwriters in the world. He wrote for Sinatra and a lot of other famous people. And I watched these people interact with great respect and warmth and, dare I say, love for each other. Yet they came from disparate backgrounds. And mm-hmm. I saw this interaction between the porn star queen of Europe and Nureyev, this incredible, delicate, charismatic dancer. And I sat just next to Rudy, they called him, on a sofa in the hall at Sergio's place. And I asked him about that. I said, what is it that binds you or allows you to be with each other in that way? He said, oh, Stuart, he said, it's very simple. We're all among the very best in the world at what we do, and that's what we have in common, and that's the bonds of respect and warmth. And that never left me. So I learned a couple of things from that. One, that being really good at something matters, but two, that you can learn from anybody who's really good at something, irrespective if you aspire to be good at what they're good at.
Yeah, I always say if you want to learn to be, how to say this, you know, someone wrote a book and it said it takes 10,000 hours to become a master. And for most people, that's probably true. You want to be a really good surgeon, you know, the more you do that. But someone once said, if you want to go faster, go with a master. Because when you're around someone who's already walked that path and knows how to be excellent at it, you can learn at a much faster rate.
Yeah, absolutely true.
And I also love the phrase, every master was once a disaster. You know, every one of us started out at some level where we weren't great, but we were willing to do the work. You know, I became a trainer in a company called Insight Training Seminars, which was very much similar to Actualizations. And I sat in the back of the room as an assistant for months until I felt like every question that someone would ask, I knew the answer before the trainer said it. And then I knew I was ready. And it was willing to pay the price to get good, willing to do the work. You know, the ER doctors who are some of the best doctors in the world. Why? Because they see everything that comes in an emergency. They have to know how to deal with broken bones and car crashes and people falling off roofs and having COVID-19 and, you know, you name it, they've dealt with it. And they deal with it all day long in a very fast pace and they get good at it. And so you got to be willing to put in the time and the effort.
And I
know, Stuart, if I may jump in for a second as well. You know, as I do these podcasts across very many domains, Major League Baseball players, country music stars, members of the Grand Ole Opry, Jack, you, all kinds of different domains, I find the same thing to be true, that almost every one of them are inspiring conversations, and it doesn't matter the domain, and those people always have a vision And they, you know, they always see the end in mind of where they're going, and they always have an abundance mentality. Mm-hmm. Those things almost always seem to be true. And you know, you guys are talking about the same thing, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing.
And I see this, one of your headings in your workbook, because I love this workbook, Jack. This is truly excellent. Surround yourself with successful people. We had a little book inspired in that direction called Who's in Your Room? And so we talk to people about inviting into their virtual room in which they live their life, people who support their dreams, support the vision, and can teach them how to get to it from where they are. And that's what you're talking about here. We all are talking about that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Robin Sharma or Hal Elrod. I've watched so many videos and been on so many summits and heard other speakers speak in the last couple of months. But one of them said that a Harvard professor said that we're the result of the conversations we have. So if you're having conversations with highly evolved, highly conscious people that have worked on themselves, people that are committed to excellence, people that have taken the time to develop their skills and become good and become great, then you're going to become great as well. It's like this idea, if you're learning to play tennis, you want to be studying with the best tennis pro you can find and playing with the best people you can find, even if you lose every game, because you're going to get a lot better than if you're playing with someone who's not that good. And I think that the idea is you can have conversations with people real, lifetime, you know, in present time. You can have them like we're having now with Zoom calls. But there are so many people that are putting information out there, masterclasses, TED Talks, TEDx Talks, YouTube videos, etc., where you can be surrounded by brilliance all day long if you chose to. It's just a matter of intending to spend a couple hours a day. I teach something called the Hour of Power, which is to do 20 minutes of meditation and to put a gratitude exercise in the end of that, 20 minutes of exercise and 20 minutes of reading. So when you're reading, you're having a conversation with the person who wrote that book. And we talk about reading as reading uplifting books, how-to books, self-improvement books, spiritual books, etc., not reading necessarily novels.
Well, I remember interviewing Alice Waters, the famous chef and the woman who started Chez Panisse and really introduced the modern California cuisine to the world, and her alumni are amongst the most famous and successful chefs on earth.
Yes.
And I asked Alice, you know, who was her most important mentor? And she said, a man I never met who is no longer alive. But I read his book and he touched my heart. And in that moment, the die was cast for the life that I have led ever since.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Thought, wow. And then I said, you know, Alice, I just would take, like to take a moment. We were sitting in the middle of shape, and they put up a two, what they call a two-top for us. And they thought we'd be done in 10 minutes, and lunch goes on around us because we talked for an hour and a half. But at the end, I said, Alice, you know, just in closing, I'd like to thank you for living a life that is a gift to the world.
Mm.
And she just teared up, and I think in that moment she felt like she'd been recognized.
Yes, yes. Well, she was seen for who she really is.
Right. Yeah. And I always think of you that way, Jack.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for living a life that's a gift to the world, and thank you for being my friend.
Well, thank you. I was fortunate enough. You live up in that area where Chez Panisse is. I have one son who lives in Berkeley, and so I've eaten there twice, and there were extraordinary experiences. Just lunch, you know, extraordinary.
Just lunch, yes.
Yeah, I know. Amazing.
Yeah, so it is amazing. Yeah. So we've come to the end of our time slot, but thank you for your generosity of spirit, Jack. Thank you for coming on the call. We'll put up about your book. And one of the things I like about this workbook is that you don't have to have read all of your other books to embrace the workbook and put it to work for you immediately.
Right.
It's so action-based, and people can do this. And I love that. Thank you.
Well, you know, I wanted to create a book that was – what I noticed, Stuart, as I was going around the world, people who had taken our coaching program, people who had gone to our live seminars, had major transformations. People who'd read the first book, some did, but not everybody. I said, what's missing? And what was missing is the action steps.
Yes.
And so literally now there's a book of, if you just do the exercises as you go along, and many of them are just writing in the book. Some of them are things you have to do, a little homework, talk to yourself in the mirror at night, whatever. What happens is by the end of the book, you are transformed. I literally was going to call the book, "Don't Read This Book, Do This Book." That was going to be the title.
I like that.
I know. Maybe next time.
Next time. All right, Jack, talking about next time, we're running out of time, but we'd always love to have you back. Thank you. And see you soon, hopefully.
My pleasure. Thank you, both. Okay.
And Jack, is there where do you want to send people to find out about all things Jack?
Just go to jackcanfield.com, and everything we do there, the seminars we do, the books we have, the audio programs. There'll be a pop-up screen right now, which is a place to get the Success Principles workbook. You'll actually go through that to go to Amazon or to Barnes & Noble or Books A Million. But if you go through there as opposed to going straight to Amazon for the Success Principles workbook, what will happen is you get three bonuses. One is a hour and a half masterclass on the self-esteem work, the Success Principles work better. You'll also get a first chapter of the book digitally downloaded immediately so you can start. And you'll also have access to a 10-week video class for free that will download a video to you once a week for about 3 to 4 minutes that will take you through some of the first principles and give you little daily to-dos that you can do that make it real simple to integrate and Velcro the material to your brain.
Oh, I like that. That's a great.
Well, Jack,
Velcro the material to your brain. That's good, Jack. I'll steal that.
I stole some from you.
Why do I think the two of you have stolen a lot from each other? Jack, I really appreciate it. We share in common a deep relationship, love and affection for the great Stuart Emery. And I appreciate you, of course, Stuart, being on again. And for all of you out there in podcast land, remember to go to successmadetolast.com to register for our newsletter filled with what I think, at least, is fun information about our future guests and great stuff in general. And go to your podcast distributor, iTunes, Spreaker, etc., and rate our show, please. Till the next time, go out there and live the best version of you.
And thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, "Mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy." They also say, "Crunch tacos, not abs." And "Psst, you're crazy" is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is, "Life is short, lick the bowl." If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen Ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen Ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.